Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:49 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is September 23rd. The Hong Kong property sector rebounded again in here today. So this is on the back of the efforts underway in China to ensure that there isn't a wider contagion risk from the bankruptcy of Evergrande. The Communist Party told Evergrande not to default today. But where the money is going to come from remains very much to be determined to make the kind of payments that are due today. And then, of course, they have the window of opportunity over the course of the next 30 days to make those coupon payments without triggering an official default. But one way or the other, it looks like the company will be eventually restructured and potentially into three different companies. But the bigger picture here is that there is a lot of money flowing into the market, and that is certainly helping to support the view that some of the yields that are available on competing property companies in the order of anything up to 20% on some of those bonds maturing in 2025 through 2027 might be rather appealing, considering that we're probably at the peak, or I guess the nadir, of negative sentiment towards China's property market. Nonetheless, it does look increasingly likely that we are at the top of the speculative portion of this bull market, which has been ongoing for 40 years. So China isn't exactly like Japan. They haven't had a property and stock market bull market, so it's sometimes difficult to appreciate just how much prices have appreciated in the property markets in China, or just how large the oversupply is with 50 million units that are unoccupied. And that is fed through by the absence of a property tax, which means that holding properties is completely without cost. And on top of that, then there are large numbers of people that don't pay any tax at all. So then laundering some of that money has been easy through the property markets as well. So the whole economy is structured to support property prices. And trying to unwind that kind of leverage is a very lengthy prospect, and it's something that could contribute to lower growth on average. So we're certainly at an interesting juncture for China, but the immediate risk at least appears to have been obviated. Now, when we think about where are the future risks, well, 10-year Treasury yields popped on the upside in here today, and we're looking at a significant potential issue here. The 10-year yield has been pretty inert. It's been up for one day and then down for the next three or four, but it's held the upward bias overall. It's finishing on the upper side of the day. It was up 11 basis points. That's a fairly substantial move. And firming from the region of the trend mean. Now, it doesn't really look like anything at all when we look at it on a weekly chart. But the one thing that was remarkable about 2020 is that in many cases, not just the USA, but certainly true in the UK and much of Europe and Australia, was that the quantity of government debt multiplied, and yet the cost of servicing that debt declined. And that was all due to a profound decline in the government bond yields, where they collapsed from a peak around 2 to about 25 basis points in March and April of, or February and March of 2020. So it's reasonable to anticipate that as those yields go back up, the cost of servicing the debt is going to increase. And if yields were to go back up to where they were back in late 2018, well, then the cost of servicing that debt would be double what it was back then, because the quantity of debt has doubled. And that represents a headwind to economic growth and to government spending. So why then are stock markets rallying? Because because Wall Street was up in a reasonably dynamic manner in here today. So certainly following through on the upside and giving short shrift to the idea that we were imminently going to have a fuller reversion back towards the mean. So we might yet have that, and this might be a dead cat bounce. But certainly we give the benefit of the doubt to the most recent dynamic. But why then is the stock market firm against a background where the cost of servicing the national debts of large numbers of countries is likely to increase substantially if yields persist higher? Well, in many respects, it might be akin to the kind of environment that we had in late 2016 after Donald Trump won the presidential election, because back then the Federal Reserve was beginning to raise interest rates. And we were treated to more than a year of quantitative tightening. So they started raising rates right at the end of 2015, but as soon as Trump won the election, then they took off and they were raising rates on a quarterly basis by about 25 basis points all the way through until 2019. And that was in direct response to the massive fiscal stimulus. The Federal Reserve at the time argued that it was pro-cyclical, that it was going to result in significant asset price inflation and created the risk of an inflationary spiral. So they decided that they were going to try and head off some of those risks, and they started raising interest rates. So potentially we're looking at a similar situation today, because let's not forget that in 2017 the stock market had another one of those years where it barely looked back. And we've just had, or arguably we're still in one of those types of environments today. And the US government is looking at running out of money in October, and the Democrats are looking at trying to push through a bill that would ensure that the government remains funded, and at the same time they may also attempt to push through the first being their $1 trillion stimulus, and on top of that the $3.5 trillion stimulus, which will be spread out over 10 years. So that's representative of a significant sum of money ready to be devoted to the economy, and we already have some inflationary pressures. So the Federal Reserve might be reasoning that this isn't a bad time to start the process of quantitative tightening, because that's exactly what they did the last time that there was a big fiscal bulge. And the Fed might also be arguing that it's not appropriate to spend all of that money right now when the economy is well on the road to recovery. So it's interesting then that the stock market remains firm, and speculative portions of the market also remain firm, and the IPO ETF has got inverse head and shoulders characteristics, and it was at a new recovery high in here today. And a couple of the IPOs that came through earlier this week, they did rather well on their first day of trading. So that's also certainly helping to support sentiment towards the market. And we can certainly see the inverse head and shoulder pattern on the weekly chart, and this looks like a really solid consolidation overall. Then we can think about the commodity complex, because obviously there are inflationary pressures, and in its statement yesterday, the Federal Reserve still held on to the view that we have transitory inflation. But their actions are beginning to tell a different story. And the UK and the Bank of England are talking about raising rates. And what was remarkable about the UK statement today is that they said that they might even raise rates before they end their quantitative easing program. So that would be really robbing Peter to pay Paul, that they are, on the one hand, putting money in and taking it out with the other. Now, when we think about the commodity complex, it's one of the certainly the areas where there's plenty of evidence of asset price inflation, and there's certainly commodity price inflation getting baked in. This debacle that that we're seeing evolve in the UK at the moment, where the wind stops blowing and electricity providers can't tackle a pop on the upside in natural gas prices, and suddenly the country is bereft of carbon dioxide, so then they can't keep up with the slaughter schedule, and then supermarkets are starting to run out of food. So obviously this is a confluence of difficulties. It's not only because of Brexit, it's not only because of the pandemic, and it's not only because of renewable energy, but certainly the resiliency of the supply chain has been impacted. But the fact that the UK is beginning to look at alternatives, well, it's not before time. The UK was an energy exporter until 2004, and since then it's been an energy importer, and I don't think that it is unreasonable to look at the difficulties that have arisen over the last 15 to 20 years, and to put them in the context of a lot of the social difficulties arose after the UK became an energy importer because there's simply less money to go around. And that would suggest that every country who's a major importer of energy should be coming up with some kind of plan to become energy independent. And the easy way to do that, the tried and trusted solution, although obviously, not to everyone's taste, is nuclear power. And nuclear does seem to be getting a second life here. Sprott is certainly buying up big portions of the spot market, and that is contributing to a supply deficit where we have had a supply surfeit for most of the last decade. And the price is starting to firm in here. And it's also getting a bit of a tailwind from oil prices. And Brent crude has popped on the upside in here. So we're at a new closing high. And rising oil prices put upward pressure on the cost of producing everything. So as oil prices start to rally, then we're starting to see upward pressure coming through in the grains and beans and wheat prices are firming from the region of the trend mean. Arabica coffee has also bounced and is continuing to firm, and this is really looking just like a consolidation in the region of the 2014 peaks. The Robusta coffee price is also firming in here. Cotton prices are starting to take off again, and sugar prices are starting to push on the upside as well. And I think we're looking at an environment which is not all that dissimilar to the big breakouts in commodities that we saw in the early 2000s. And sugar, in particular, is also a major energy commodity, and particularly in Brazil. So that's also helping to support the market in here right now. On top of that, shipping costs continue to remain firm, and this looks like a new bull market. And I think, again, it's just representative of these politically, I guess it's completely justifiable to look at the polluting effect of many of the kinds of things that we rely on to ensure the sustainability of modern life and think that something needs to be done about pollution. And that was certainly the case for the shipping industry. And the introduction of the IMO 2020 rules, that represented a significant additional cost. And it didn't have an impact on prices because of the pandemic. But as demand started to rebound, well, then we've seen a significant breakout in the shipping price, and this is still likely to persist. We're going to have to see a whole new building cycle of vessels to make up for the shortfall, and additionally to So there's a shortfall because of the excess demand, and there's a shortfall because of the aging number of ships and the excessive cost of retrofitting them. So this is a trend that has legs, and it contributes to commodity price inflation, and it contributes to the cost of importing everything. And when at the when a container can cost as much as $13,000, then that's multiples of what it was a year ago. That additional cost gets put on to every individual item within that container. And that's exactly what we're seeing right now. When we think about the industrial resources, even a mild easing in the outlook for Chinese property, then the LME Metals Index has firmed in a reasonably dynamic manner. It's right in the region of the peaks from back in 2011 and 2007, and it looks like it's going to break on the upside. So we're seeing plenty of evidence of commodity price inflation coming through here. So one has to then ask, why isn't gold doing better? And gold prices were down $20 in here today. Well, we have plenty of evidence of commodity price inflation. And that's certainly feeding through into perceptions of inflation as well, and people starting to preempt future inflation by accelerating purchases. So there's certainly evidence of inflationary pressures. And then the bigger point is, why isn't gold rallying more? Why is it having such difficulty in holding these rallies? I think there are two big reasons. The first is that demand in places like India and China has moderated because of the difficulties they've had during the pandemic. So there's certainly that. But then we have the best way to think about it is negative real interest rates. So all the way through 2019 and 2020, we had a big rally in gold, and that was as negative real interest rates became progressively more negative. Now, I don't think that there's any realistic possibility that we're going back to an environment of positive real interest rates. And the debt totals are simply too large. And there's just no way that governments are going to be able to raise, or excuse me, central banks are going to be able to raise rates, or governments reduce their spending to a point where they can tolerate positive real interest rates. But unfortunately, at the present moment, because interest rates are rising, and because the impact that that's had, the impact that it's going to have on the economy hasn't been felt yet, then the overall negative real interest rate environment is tightening rather than expanding. And that's putting pressure on gold. But the bigger point is that bond yields can only go up so far before we start to see significant tailback loops into the wider economy. So we're certainly seeing stock markets that are firm, and we're seeing an environment where investors are still willing to give the benefit of the doubt to expanding liquidity, and the response of China to the Evergrande issue supports that view, and then the response of the US government to social unrest a year ago is also supporting that view. So we may see gold continuing to underperform in the short term, but ultimately it will outperform in the longer term, because it's just going to be extremely difficult for central banks to get out from under this debt trap that is evolving. So I think that's the primary reason why gold has not put, well, I guess has been misfiring over the course of the last while, even if it is continuing to hold this $1,700 area. And of course, upward pressure on oil prices puts some funding pressure on miners, and that's also true of gold. So gold miners are now back below the $30 area. This is a key area of potential support. So I'm anticipating that it's unlikely, well, I believe it's unlikely that any move below this level is going to be sustained. And I've introduced bids below the market in the event that we get a shock, so that I'll be buying at attractive or even more attractive levels than we have right now. I nonetheless don't believe that. I'd be surprised if those bids are in fact hit. I think that's probably the best way to put it, but certainly this is a dynamic on the downside, and certainly the break below the 30 level needs to be monitored. Now, when we then think about well, where are we in this broader cycle? We're in an environment where central banks feel like they need to act. We're seeing a lot of government spending, and we're seeing commodity price inflation. And that holds out the prospect that some countries are going to experience stagflation, that growth will not come in at the rates that they are anticipating. And growth rates have been moderating. So there is the potential then that we're going to move into a more difficult environment, but we don't have a great deal of evidence to suggest that that is starting today. And as long as we continue to see sequences of higher reaction lows and reactions that are only in the region of about 3 to 5% in the space of a year, well, there's not going to be a lot to worry about. But this market is one big downward dynamic away from looking rather ropey. And I do think we're in a more difficult environment, despite the fact that we've had this rebound. Because the thing that I was worried about at the beginning of this year was that interest rates were ramping higher, and then that didn't happen. So then we had this big rebound in the stock market. And that just because it didn't happen then doesn't mean that it can't happen now. So we have to pay attention to the fact that this rising yield environment is a significant headwind in terms of spending and government support for markets, and the fiscal has been almost more important than the monetary over the course of this pandemic. And I think that any change in that is going to be felt by markets. So I do think there's an additional risk premium that we need to pay attention to right now, and particularly because a 5% pullback against a background where we haven't had more than 3% in a year is an inconsistency. So it does suggest that we are in a more risky environment right now. I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.